From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. In practice and ideas, the cultural significance of play and sport is as old as the Olympics of ancient Greece and as modern as the sociological theories of the Dutch scholar Johan Huizinga. What's the social importance of what Huizinga called homo ludens, playful humankind? With respect to contemporary issues, such as the professionalization of sport and the relationship of sports to education, how does sports create and reflect social values? Those questions are central to a study by one scholar who's completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center. He is Robert Simon, a professor of philosophy at Hamilton College, one of my guests on Soundings this week. During a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Robert Simon completed his book, Sports and Social Values, published in 1985 by Prentice Hall, Incorporated. Also participating in the following discussion, the first in a series on Soundings, is Larry Keith, Assistant Managing Editor at Sports Illustrated. According to Robert Simon, questions about violence, competition, the pursuit of excellence, equality, and social justice are central to considerations of both sports and social values. Here is Robert Simon.
We can think of values as goals, which we think sports ought to be promoting. Of course, we can think about values more generally, too, but our topic today is in the area of sports. For example, there can be a result-oriented ethic of sport in which winning and fame, publicity, external rewards become very, very important. Historically, there have been other ideals or values about the function of sports. For example, a procedure-oriented result, that it's how you play the game. It's the challenge inherent in competition that's important. There can be an aesthetic approach to sport, where the movements in sport are seen as reflecting beauty. There can be the emphasis on sport as a builder of character. You see in novels such as Tom Brown's School Day, where battles are won on the playing fields of Eden, where sports try to promote good people. And we have to ask what we mean by good people. Not everyone is going to agree on that. So there are a lot of conflicts about what goals sports should be promoting. Are those goals defensible or indefensible? Has perhaps a result-oriented ethic gotten perhaps out of hand in contemporary sports?
And we have many directions that we can go in when we talk about social values. Larry Keith from Sports Illustrated, let me draw you into the conversation. You're not a philosopher, you're a journalist. But let me ask you to comment on this. Has there ever been a time when sports in America has not had a sort of direct social connection in the sense of the affirmation or the denial of values?
Well, I think that because sports are such an important part of American life, they've always reflected in some way social values of that particular era. Sports personalities today are accepted as stars and heroes of our culture. There was a time in America where they were looked down upon, somewhat like the actors and actresses of another era.
Let me be perfectly naive for a minute. There was a time when sports stars were looked down upon?
Ruffians, I think, might be one way to describe them. If you look at the early history of baseball, certainly that's true. It wasn't seen as perhaps honest work. A big, strong boy such as that might best be served baling hay or something. But sports has become important to the extent today that we elect people from sports to high office. Indeed, we elect sports casters to the presidency of the United States.
Larry Keith used a term a moment ago. The word was reflecting, sports reflecting social values. Bob, do you think that happens?
Well, I think we can take that two ways. It's a descriptive question. In fact, do sports reflect our social values? And we can take it as a prescriptive question. Should we use sports as a means of expressing social values?
Does one predominate today? What do you think?
I think the relationship is probably quite complex. I doubt if there's simply a one-way influence that sports dictate our social values. Clearly, sports reflect changes in our society. The use of recreational drugs by players is tied into the use of recreational drugs in society-wide. However, one could take the prescriptive position that athletes, because of the special position they're in, and maybe the special influence they have on a lot of people, have special ethical responsibilities to behave differently from the rest of society. You can argue they don't. Why should they be singled out to hold up the banner of whatever some people think.
Well, regardless of which way you might argue that question, Larry Keith from Sports Illustrated, do you think that athletes today are conscious of an ethical function or a social function in our society?
I think increasingly they are. Uh-huh. I think because so many of their fellows have found themselves in uncomfortable situations that there is a movement among, for instance, some baseball players saying, you know, enough is enough. With the matter of drugs or whatever, they are taking away from my profession and taking away from the game that I'm playing. That is my business, my life's calling, if you will. That has not always been the case, but I think what we're maybe going through now is a little bit of a reaction to some of the freedom that perhaps existed in the baseball society and the basketball society. For instance, pro basketball is in large part cleaned up its act, mm-hmm. and baseball is only now getting into that area. Part of the problem was, I would submit, was that the professional sports didn't want to recognize that even a problem existed. And when people recognized the problem of whatever sort, recreational drugs existed, then they began to deal with it. First there was denial, and then there was acceptance, and now there's dealing with it, and I think we're much better off because of it. Mm-hmm. And as this happens, I think it creates sends a message to society at large that problems do exist, problems should be dealt with.
Let's talk about winning. Bob Simon from Hamilton College, what about winning? Have we always had this intense devotion to winning in our sporting life?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the historical question. It does seem to me that there's more of an emphasis now, particularly at the top levels, than there used to be. But, you know, there can be two extreme views on this. One is sort of the winning is everything view, a view which I think was mistakenly attributed to Vince Lombardi.
Yeah, I want to nail that quotation down, incidentally, in just a moment, but go ahead.
The other view is that winning really isn't important at all. It's simply the process.
The effort.
We might want to make a distinction between the level at which people are participating. No one says, for example, to a great dancer, you shouldn't care about performing your dance well. Uh-huh. All you should do is think about meeting the challenge and the procedure of preparation and having a good time and having fun the dancer wants to achieve. And for a top athlete who puts a lot of work into achieving success, should be concerned, it seems to me, and has a right to, as much of a right as the artist, to be concerned about outcomes. On the other hand, to make the outcome the whole thing, and to think that's all there is to sports, and that a person is a failure if they don't win a game, seems to me to be too much. The value of sports, it's competitive sports anyway, it seems to me, is the challenge they constitute. And one can learn a lot about oneself, and one can meet a challenge, or one can not meet the challenge but still have a valuable experience and yet not win. Mm-hmm. I mean, if winning were everything, we could just play people we knew we could beat all the time. Mm-hmm.
Larry Keith?
I think the importance of winning in this country is an example of sports reflecting social values. I think that the pure Greek notion of competition for competition's sake has never played well here. And I think it goes back to reasons that people came to this country. Gospel, glory, and gold. Well, glory comes from winning, and gold and comes from winning, and some coaches preach the gospel of winning. I think it's indigenous to our society that winners are put up on the in the trophy case, and losers are put down in the basement. It's something that causes or can allow tremendous abuses to occur. One of those abuses relates to something that Bob said: the athlete who does want to compete only for competition's sake, who does compete in sports almost for the artistic nature of it, is looked down upon, is in fact made fun of, to the extent that, you know, hey, we're in this to win and you're in this to look good.
Mm-hmm. Bob Simon.
Yeah, I think it's especially harmful when it filters down to the level of children's sports. Mm-hmm. I do think some organized leagues have really improved their attitudes toward the way they allow young children to be treated. But to make winning the only thing at low age levels, which I've seen, is seems to me can be very, very damaging. The child who might come to love sports later, but as, for example, a late developer, is made to feel like a loser, sits on the bench, and loses a lifetime of participation because of a bad early experience.
Mm-hmm. Larry Keith, what did Vince Lombardi say? Straighten this out about winning is everything, winning is something what?
he is said to have said, winning isn't the most important thing, it's the only thing.
Uh-huh.
That is what he is supposed to have said. Bob Simon has researched it. He can tell us what he really said.
Bob?
Well, what I found he really said, which I hope is correct, is winning isn't everything, trying to win is everything.
Was that a journalistic problem, Larry Keith?
I'm not quite sure, but I think that because there is such an important difference between what he said and what he meant, it's good that it would be clarified for the public record, because I think it's very important, the notion of doing your best, trying your best. I mean, that's something that that I try to tell my young children, 8 and 6, the two boys, and a little girl, too, is just now getting there, I guess. But in the area of sports competition and academic work and virtually every endeavor, is try to do your best. If it's important enough to do it, try to do your best. I then don't have the tail wagging the dog by saying, and you must win.
In other words, Larry Keith, you're describing an ethical situation in which the ethics, what speaks to, if not dictates, to the sporting effort rather than the other way around.
I would like to see, certainly on the kids' level of sports, to put the emphasis on participation. I've covered professional sports for 15 years at Sports Illustrated, and it should not be equated to sports as it is played on the amateur level, on the kids' level. It's a business on that level. It's a life's work on that level, and coaches don't often grasp that difference when they're sitting on the sideline. Not to belabor a point, but I would just mention that I recently coached my first athletic event. I was asked to come in for a soccer coach who couldn't make the game, and it was the most trying experience of my life. Not only did I lose 4-0, but the difficult thing to me was making sure everybody got into the game. And losing all sense of what was happening on the field and being more concerned with what was happening on the sidelines. It's your turn to go in. It's your turn to go in. But this is the rule that exists in the particular soccer league that my son plays in.
And that's a good thing.
And it's a good thing.
Yeah. Bob Simon.
I agree with almost everything Larry said. Just two qualifications, though. Sometimes it's very hard to keep those two levels apart. If the professional high-level amateur level is getting a lot of attention, the attitudes there filter down into the children's sports. For example, in youth hockey, if there's a lot of fighting in the National Hockey League, kids in youth hockey are going to think they have to be just as tough.
Yeah.
On the level of participation with children, I basically agree with Larry. I think it's also true, though, that at some levels, some children have more ability than others, and it's important to be fair. Just as in schools, we may want to be fair to the children with high ability, we may also want to be fair in sports to the children with high ability. So it's a question of balancing participation with helping kids to develop their skills. And it's a fine line as to how you do that.
That comes down to individual good judgment on the part of parents and teachers and coaches.
I think that's right.
That's one of the many interesting points, frankly, that Bob creates in his book, Sports and Social Values, the idea of what about the kid who's a better athlete? Doesn't he deserve something in the context of playing among kids? And frankly, I never thought about it. I'm not sure I totally agree with it, but it's an interesting concept. The idea of giving everybody an equal chance to play might be unfair to the person whose ability is unequal, which is to say greater.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, the coach on the sideline is more apt to send in little Johnny who can hit the outside shot or carry the ball for the touchdown or hit the home run.
Bob Simon from Hamilton College, Larry Keith from Sports Illustrated. Our topic is sports and social values. We have sort of lurked around the edges here of the word education for a while. This is certainly an American institutional social value. Describe for me the hideously complex relationship between sports and education in this country. Larry, you look at it from a sort of a national vantage point. You look at junior colleges and all the NCAA colleges and all of that. What's your sense of it?
Well, even have gone down at Sports Illustrated to the a better high school level, and I have found in my experience that where things are done correctly, where the emphasis is put on playing the game fairly, playing it by the rules, where this type of quality comes to the fore, success is going to be achieved and be sustained and maintained in the long run. I think of the high school basketball program at DeMatha in Washington, and I think of some of the better universities playing college basketball, Indiana, North Carolina, for instance. There's a right way and a wrong way, and it can be done in a context of good education as well as good athletic success.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Bob Simon, you're a professor at Hamilton College, you see it from the standpoint of the academic angle, do you think that the sports tail is wagging the educational dog here?
At many institutions, it certainly is. I'd like to make 2 points on that, I think. First is, I agree with Larry, something Larry said earlier, which I think was quite important, that there are educational lessons to be learned through participation in sport. For example, the value of discipline, learning to recognize the difference between good play and bad play, learning the importance of standards. The president of Hunter College recently argued that sports could be used by the high schools in many areas as a way of transmitting values like this. Of course, we have to define carefully what we mean by discipline. Does it mean following the coach no matter what?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it mean working hard toward a common goal? Or does it mean something else? All those terms can be used to convey a whole set of different values. I think because of the money publicity at many institutions of higher learning, the educational function has been lost sight of, although I also agree with Larry that many institutions, such as the ones he mentioned, do a lot better than others.
We're now witnessing a process in which, correct me if I'm wrong, Larry Keith, Bob Simon, the academicians are sort of flexing their muscles now. They're beginning to say, wait a minute, let us run this game, or at least, we come back to this word participation. What's happening there, Larry?
I think what's happening is terrific and long overdue, which is to say the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, is finding itself engaged in greater involvement with the institutional heads. I think that many of the problems that exist in college athletics today can be laid not on the doorstep of the athletes, of the coaches, of the athletic directors, but of the chief executive officers at these schools who allow abuses to take place.
In other words, in your view, that's where the buck really stops.
That's where the buck stops, because that's we're talking about institutional abuse here. We're talking about schools being put on probation. We're talking about student athletes not graduating, indeed being accepted and not even being able to read.
Mm-hmm. Larry, is this because the university presidents, I suppose, the main administrators, as you say, the CEOs, is that because of indifference? Is it because are they ignorant of what's going on? What's the mixture, the relationship between the sports department and the academic departments?
I think in the past it has certainly been ignorance, but it has been ignorance of the type, I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. They want to know the bottom line. They want to know that the football team is winning and filling the stadium. They want to know the basketball team is going to the NCAA tournament. They don't want to know some of the abusive procedures that might take place to put that winning team on the court. Out of sight, out of mind, mm-hmm. becomes somewhat of the philosophy.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to the first in a series of discussions about sports and social values. The Soundings panelists are Robert Simon, a professor of philosophy at Hamilton College, and Larry Keith, assistant managing editor at Sports Illustrated. During a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Robert Simon completed his book, Sports and Social Values, published in 1985 by Prentice Hall, Incorporated. In the discussion at hand, Robert Simon and Larry Keith examine the relationship between sports and education, who plays, and under which academic circumstances. Bob Simon, again, you're a professor at Hamilton College. You've written this book, Sports and Social Values. Is there such a thing as a student athlete, quote unquote? And this is a sort of an interesting term that gets kicked around in the schools and the athletic programs.
I think there is at the level of Division III and at some of the smaller Division I programs, perhaps the Ivy League. I'm sure there is also at some of the Division I top programs which have managed to successfully combine academics and athletics, perhaps Notre Dame, perhaps North Carolina, perhaps a few others. My concern, though, is that at that top level, the seasons are just becoming so long, the pressure to recruit and stay on television so great, that academics are lost sight of. How can, for example, take a sport that isn't really considered quite major, a college baseball in the Southwest and the West Coast, where teams play 100 games a year. Mm-hmm. How can one keep up with a demanding academic schedule if one's doing that? How even the NCAA basketball tournament, which I have to confess I love, teams are on the road for weeks. It may have been Georgetown last year that stayed out in the West Coast for a week and a half.
Well, now, what might be an answer to this? Should we create a different structure for the athletes' academic pursuits? Should we give them, special dispensations to the, advantage or disadvantage of the other students on campus, Bob?
Some people have made the proposal, for example, Senator Bill Bradley at one time, that we just treat college athletes at the major Division I programs as professionals, uh-huh. not require them to go to class, allow them to go to classes if they want, but not require them to be students and pay them. And that would at least have the virtue, according to people like Senator Bradley, of honesty.
How much cynicism is there in that suggestion? How much, Larry Keith, is there cynicism there?
This is, in fact, a proposal that has been made by many serious-minded people. Dean Smith, the basketball coach at North Carolina, and other coaches feel that...
Not cynically, feel that
athletes should be paid a certain amount of money to bring the money that might be being paid from below the table mm-hmm. to above the table. I think that when these proposals are mentioned, they put they devalue something that I think is very important.
And that is?
The value and importance of the college education
yeah.
and the scholarship. There is a contract which an athlete enters into with an institution, and that is come out for the team, do the best you can, and we will give you the right and access to a free education. If you get hurt, that education is in most cases continued. If you don't play, if you don't live up to your billing, that education opportunity is still there. Where the criticism comes, they say, well, what about the great player, the quarterback who's leading his team to the Rose Bowl every year? Well, there's only two teams in the Rose Bowl every year, and a lot more teams losing than are winning. There are a lot more athletes who are sitting on the bench that are starting in the starting lineup. So I'm very much opposed to it, but there is a strong feeling that these types of incentives should be existing.
Mm-hmm. Bob Simon from Hamilton College, you've written a book called Sports and Social Values. Larry Keith from Sports Illustrated, our topic is sports and social values. Bob, do we have students, kids who are going through college who might just as well not even be there? I'm sort of fishing for the on the mythological story I heard about a kid at the University of Southern California who never went to class, never met a professor, never wrote a paper, played, 3 years of football and graduated. Is that an exaggeration?
I haven't heard that story. That may be, but we know from the Tulane scandal that most of the athletes at that university, which is a very fine university, were taking courses at a special college about which the rest of the faculty had grave misgivings. The courses seemed to have little academic content. I know from my own experience of a player who transferred to Hamilton from a large Division I school where the coaching staff told him to avoid difficult courses because it would take too much time away from basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So, although I don't know about the particular horror story you told, I'm sure there are people who have no educational goals, or are not asked to have educational goals. Now, a response to that, one might say, is the athlete is given the opportunity, and it's up to the athlete to take advantage of it. But when you're dealing with 17-year-old kids who may have been regarded as idols in their own communities through high schools
mm-hmm.
and expect them to make the choices that a competent adult might be expected to make in maturity, is perhaps putting too much pressure on those kids.
Mm-hmm.
Do the universities have an obligation to ensure that the people they're using learn something?
Do they?
I think they certainly do. But to go to make athletes as different from the rest of the student body, as many schools do, is just a recipe for disaster.
So I take it then, Bob Simon, that you would be against a sort of across-the-board uniform SAT single-number sort of admission policy.
I think the NCAA has proposed a rule, Proposition 48,
mm-hmm.
which requires a minimum of 700 for freshmen in the SATs, which is a pretty low score,
mm-hmm.
to participate in freshman athletics. I favor that over what we have now. I think that's a very positive step. The only qualification I'd raise is that the 700 is – some schools, the average level of the student body is way above that. Others, it's not very far above it. And you may want to tie the number required – to the level of students entering the particular school, which
mm-hmm.
might differ
mm-hmm.
from institution to institution. It might be a 900 at a Duke or 1,000 at a Duke and lower somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
depending on the average scores of the student body.
I don't think you're going to get away by having a higher standard at one school than at another because the athletic personnel, and indeed even the president himself, if he's more involved today, would scream bloody murder about that. I do think it's important, though, to have goals and have standards. I think that we see kids, athletes, applying themselves to goals and standards on the athletic field, and I don't see why we can't ask them to apply themselves to goals and standards in the classroom. The notion that it is unfair to ask a player to achieve a certain academic level doesn't give much credit to that individual. And I think there's a short-sightedness there that needs to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Bob Simon.
There's also another educational issue about sports. Larry spoke of the role of the president, so I'd raise a question about the role of the faculty. If sports do have a legitimate educational function, which I think Larry thinks they have and which I think they have, shouldn't faculties be more concerned about what goes on in the athletic program? There's a tendency on the part of some professors to say, sports, get it, what's it doing here anyway? We do know the graduation rates at many places are very, very low. So the faculty are not passing athletes who aren't doing the work. Maybe sometimes they are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the problem also is that athletes often find ways into courses especially designed to keep them in school rather than courses that the rest of the student body is taking. We just saw an article in the Raleigh, North Carolina paper this morning, which showed that even at the top places in the North Carolina state system, the graduation rate for athletes was 50%. I think that statistic was a little misleading because I think it may take it was over a four-year, I think that they studied it for over a four-year period, and I'm sure the rate gets better.
Now, wait,
but that's considered quite good in college sports,
yeah.
Big-time university sports.
Well, I was just going to say, Bob Simon, in a purely statistical sense, that ain't bad. But when we're talking about, you know, to put a grandiose term here, the future of these student-athletes, when we're putting that on the line, that's pretty miserable, isn't it, that we have only a 50% graduation?
We don't know what the graduation rate is. The article didn't say for other students at that school.
Mm-hmm.
But there are places where the graduation rate is 10, 13, 14, 15%.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's higher than that for the rest of the student body. Mm-hmm.
Larry, Keith?
There's a big difference between graduation and eligibility.
There's a big difference between graduation and education.
Absolutely. That's right. Absolutely. And when I was speaking of the college professor in the trenches, too often to get the athletic department off his back, he might help to keep a player eligible. The fact that players aren't graduating has very little to do with the greater problem. The greater problem is that they can play without going to class and
mm-hmm.
that they can be kept eligible by taking basket weaving courses in some instances. I think there's a great problem here of overgeneralities.
That's right.
But I think that we should all recognize that. Kids should be asked to go to class. They should be asked to maintain the basic standards. They should ask to be made eligible. They should be asked to maintain degree progress. Where that is not being done, it's because the chief executive officer of the school, the president, the chancellor, and the faculty members are not standing up to the athletic department.
Mm-hmm. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to the first in a series of discussions about sports and social values. The Soundings panelists were Robert Simon, a professor of philosophy at Hamilton College, and Larry Keith, assistant managing editor at Sports Illustrated. Next week on Soundings, Robert Simon and Larry Keith will conclude their conversation about sports and social values. For a cassette copy of this two-part discussion, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for the first in a series of conversations about sports and social values. The Soundings panelists will be Robert Simon of Hamilton College and Larry Keith of Sports Illustrated. Robert Simon is the author of Sports and Social Values, published in 1985. What's the cultural significance of play in sport? Activities as old as the Olympics of the ancient Greeks and as modern as sociological theories. Sports and Social Values, Part 1, this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.